This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
A few weeks ago, I started a set of talks about the obstacles or hindrances that arise in meditation and in life. And if you remember, they were sleepiness, restlessness, desire, craving, aversion, desire and craving, the same thing, aversion, and doubt. And those are the five sort of traditional ones that are talked about. These come out of the Buddhist world, but it's not particularly Buddhism per se. It's pretty obvious how this is what happens in our mind. So if you remember when I was sharing about the obstacles in general, what tends to happen is we're trying to meditate. And then, we looked at pain as another obstacle to meditation. We did that the last talk that I gave. So what tends to happen is we're meditating and then one of these obstacles come up. We get sleepy, we experience pain, we get sort of lost in fantasies. And then we think, what's happening to my meditation? I can't even meditate. There's something wrong. And what I was trying to say, I hope I conveyed, is that it's really not a problem. It is part of the practice. And if we can both try to counteract the hindrance or the obstacle through, you know, tools, like when you're sleepy, you can stand up. When you're restlessness, you can relax a little bit more. The things that we talked about, you can work with the obstacle, and then also know that the obstacle is the practice. It is my practice. Okay, my practice is, can I be mindful of sleepiness? Can I be mindful of restlessness? And these are very specific things that we can do to be aware of the obstacle. And as I pointed out, what's important is that in life, the same things happen, right? We have all these obstacles that happen in the midst of our lives. And so rather than thinking, oh no, if only I didn't have a sick parent, then I could go live the life I want to live. But in truth, that is your life. And how do we work with it skillfully? In ways that cultivate more compassion, more kindness, more wisdom, and everything becomes a practice. So the next obstacle that I wanted to talk about is the obstacle of desire. Desire, it's sometimes called desire, craving, wanting, and longing, like that territory. It's really any kind of mental pursuit of pleasantness that prevents us from being in the present moment. So it might be fantasizing about the past, imagining something in the future, desiring something in the present. It might be you're just thinking about food constantly or when you're trying to meditate, or it might be that you're planning a wonderful trip that you're going to take. Or it might be that you're thinking about it can be more subtle. Like, I had a great meditation yesterday. I hope I can have the best one. It felt so good. My mind was so peaceful, right? You can be thinking about something more subtle, and that's still desire or longing, wanting, manifesting itself. And sometimes thinking itself is pleasant. So you're meditating, you just start thinking about something, thinking, and you get kind of lost in that as a kind of pleasant experience, but it takes you out of the present moment. When we're having these feelings of wanting or longing or, you know, imagining this great experience that we're hoping for or what we already have, it's not the craving that we're having is not simply like it's not simply I want something. The research describes craving as a much more complex process that involves, it's not just the feeling of wanting something, it's thoughts and images and bodily sensations and emotions that are attached, and it's the way our attention gets drawn, right? So the elaboration of the, so we might just like, I want a cookie, right? We might have that desire, I want a cookie, but then that when it goes into the craving and the desire, it's more like we add all these images to it and ideas and what it's going to give us, and it's the experience and how good we'll feel, right? This is the whole kind of constellation of desire. So it's not just like I want a cookie. It's if I get the cookie, then I'm going to be happy. If I get, oh, this cookie is going to look like this, and it's the special, and it's going to make me feel this way, and the cookie is the best cookie I've ever had in my life. I don't want, right? These are all, you understand how it's not just like a simple thing. It's a constellation of different aspects of it. So the mind doesn't just experience the desire, it can also feed the desire by thinking about it. And this is what we're going to talk about. So what the research really shows is that one of the reasons mindfulness can be useful is instead of elaborating the craving, we learn to notice the actual experience of craving in the present moment, which I'm going to talk about. And this is done, there's a lot of different studies looking at using it for food cravings. There's a lot of mindfulness for addiction and I think mostly substance use. There's even some mindfulness research looking at like what's it called? Behavioral addictions, but I'll get into all that as we go on. So where do we get caught? Desire and longing, wanting, that whole area, it often we get caught because there's a promise connected to it. There's, if I get my new car, then I'm going to be happy. If I get this relationship, then I'm going to be happy. If I get go on this vacation, then essentially, what we're looking for is happiness. If I get this particular achievement at work. And sometimes it does happen, right? Sometimes we get this thing, we really wanted it, and we're just happy. Oh, great, I got success. So I got a promotion at work and I'm happy. So they're like many of the things we want are wholesome. Again, this is something I'll talk about in a moment, but sometimes we get something and then the excitement fades, like the day after your birthday, right? Oh, I've been waiting for this beautiful whatever piece of jewelry or and you get it and then it's wonderful for a little while and then it's not so wonderful. Kids show us this the most, right? You get a kid a birthday or Christmas or Hanukkah present or whatever, and they're so excited, and then the next thing they've forgotten about it, or they're playing with the box. They'd rather do that than the thing itself. So sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we get what we want, and sometimes we don't get what we want and we're pretty disappointed. So that happens. Sometimes we get what we want and we're disappointed anyway. So one of my favorite cartoons showed a couple at like a travel agency back in the day when we had travel agencies, and they're staring, looking at some images of, a beautiful trip to Hawaii or something, and the quote is, "That looks so wonderful. I can't wait to be disappointed." And so there's a way that our minds can go towards like, oh, we know this is going to be good, but then it doesn't pan out and then we're not so happy. Or we want something more. That wasn't enough. I remember when my daughter was about 3 years old, somewhere around 3, 4, and she was really obsessed with trains. That was like her thing. You know how little kids love trains. So I decided to plan this wonderful day for her where I took her on a train ride, and we were here I live, over in, near Culver City. So we got on the train there and we were going to Union Station, and she's riding in her first train and she's riding along and she looks really, really happy. And then after about, I would say, a minute and a half or something, she got this really disturbed look on her face and she said, "Better train." So this is true, and this is what many of us are like, right? We're not as sort of unfiltered as a 3-year-old, but you get something, you're wanting, you think it's going to make this person, it's going to change my life if I can be in relationship with them. And then you're like, well, maybe I want a better train, a better person. I mean, that's why the dating apps are so dastardly in a way, right? Because there's always the potential for something better down the road. So if you just swipe left, the next one's coming. So that desire mind really gets fed. And that desire mind can be problematic as we're going to continue to explore. So the problem that I'm pointing to is not that we shouldn't have pleasure or find things that are lovely in our life or go for things or have goals. The problem is the clinging and the grasping around the pleasure. So it's like, I would love this new puppy. I'll just say, okay, that's fine. That's a lovely thing. You want a puppy. But when the mind then gets sort of hooked and stuck on it, it becomes very sticky. If I don't get this puppy, my life is going to be over. It's the most important thing. My happiness depends on getting the puppy. This is a problem because what happens is we tend to put the sense of happiness into the object itself, right? Like when I get this, I don't know why I thought of puppy because puppies sure are cute. We don't, maybe they will provide lasting happiness. Possible, but let's pick something else. When I get this new car, then I'm going to be happy. But the truth is that happiness isn't within the object, it's not contained in the object. Pleasantness is a feeling inside our body and mind, which we have in reaction to stimuli. So you see something that is pleasant, or you feel, or you taste something that's pleasant, you smell something that's pleasant, our body reacts by having a feeling of pleasantness. We think it is in the object, but it's actually in our minds and our bodies. So what tends to happen is we associate this, we think the thing external to us is going to provide us happiness. But happiness, as we know, as we've talked about many times, happiness is an inside job. It's not dependent on things giving us that happiness because the things don't have any ability to make us happy. And in fact, one person may get really happy with a puppy, another person doesn't like dogs, and that dog is not going to make them happy at all. So it's not inherent to the object itself. What happens internally is there's an experience of want of liking something. It's pleasant. And then when it gets problematic, we grab onto it, we grasp, I need it. This thing is so important. And we're trying to keep that pleasant feeling going and soothe that feeling of, I need this, I need this, I need this to make me happy. So, what's interesting is that it's possible to feel a desire arising, to notice it with awareness, and to not necessarily act on it. We absolutely can act on it. We might want something and then act on it. But we can also not act on it if we have consciousness, if we have mindfulness. So the idea is it's essentially you don't have to satisfy a desire to make it go away. You can still have a feeling of desire, notice it, and the desires are rising and then letting it pass. And you're none the worse for wear, as they say. So this is consistent with research on mindfulness and craving. Mindfulness isn't about like I shouldn't have wants. It's about changing our relationship to wanting and going towards something that's not, it's not about the happiness isn't something external from me. It's the app external to me. The happiness is inside myself, that there's a possibility of contentment. And that contentment isn't dependent on external conditions. The possibility with contentment of being okay with things as they are. I have heard this story. I think it's true. My understanding is it's true. It's an interesting story, nonetheless, is that Thailand is a Buddhist country, and when the development organizations went over to Thailand, they wanted to start do more like the like World Bank kinds of wanted to develop and build more, and people were really content. They were happy. They were living lives that they felt content. They had family. They had their spiritual religious practice. They had lives. They may not have had a lot of money. This is back in the day. Thailand is now very, very developed, as for those of you who have been there. And so what I was told, and this is by Sulak Sivaraksha, who is a activist from Thailand, he said that they began to manufacture desire because they wanted people to want things so that they would want more buildings and more, more prosperity and more access to the natural resources and stuff in Thailand. So things like there were billboards that said, "Contentment's not enough. What about a new car?" And it's a very interesting thing to think that how much we're manipulated into desire, and that happens here as well. But nonetheless, this is just a sort of side point. Desire can be cultivated, is kind of what I'm saying, and so can contentment. And contentment is finding that sense of being okay, no matter what is arising, that we can be okay in the midst of. We can have an okayness that is not dependent upon external conditions. So, how do we work with desire in meditation? And how do we build contentment? One of the ways is, and especially when desire arises as an obstacle, how does it kind of messes up our practice? Because what happens is, we're meditating and then we spend 20 minutes thinking about, pizza or whatever is your thing, and you're thinking about it and thinking about it. And next thing you know, the bell rings and you're like, "Oh, that was great. I meditated for a good 20 minutes." But actually, you're really contemplating pizza. So it's important to notice it so it doesn't take us into this loop of just getting lost in our desire and not being in the present moment. So what can we do? We can notice it in our body. That's a big one. We can label it, right? You can first label it, like when you're meditating, you notice desire arises. Oh, wanting or desiring or craving. You can kind of use a word that works for you. And then what do we feel in our bodies connected to it? That's the interesting thing. It's actually very palpable. We might have a feeling like a clutching feeling or anticipation or an urgency or grasping. And so it's a very interesting thing to do. And we're going to play with this in a little while when I finish my talk, to just notice it as wanting, fantasizing, desiring. Notice what's happening in your body. And then a couple of things you can do is you can reflect on your motivation for meditating. So the point of meditating is not to think about pizza. The point of meditating is to have more calm and ease in my body and mind. You can also do some kindness practice for yourself. That's another thing you might try. You can also learn to recognize the relief in the times that it has passed, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. But first of all, I want to take a moment to just see if we can notice what desire feels like in our bodies. So if you don't mind, close your eyes for a moment and think about something you want, something that it could be like a material thing, could be, you could think about food. I really want some chocolate. I want some, I don't know, anything. Could be a person, could be an achievement. Okay. And now, as you think about this particular thing, notice if you can sense what it feels like in your body to want it. So bring your attention into the body. And what do you feel? And keep saying, "Oh, I want that," something like that, just to kick off the feeling. What do you notice? Okay, I'm going to pause. You can open your eyes for a moment. I'm going to pause for a moment and just, if you type into the chat what you noticed when I invited you to feel the longing, the wanting. What did it feel like in your body? Or what did you notice in your mind? Is anything obvious? My mouth was watering. Tense muscles, clenched jaw, chest tightness. I started doing a little dance, right? We kind of got a little antsy, right? Sagging feeling. Yeah. blank. So maybe it didn't feel so much. Yeah, for me, sometimes it's like my heart feels a little burny, tense. I could taste the food I was thinking about. So all of you are practicing mindfulness with it. Like when there is desire arising, what's happening? And the reason that felt like I was going to cry, hopeful, inner twisting. So everybody had very different experiences. But when you're meditating and the desire arises, we can learn to pay attention. Like, what is happening in my body right now? Oh, I feel hopeful. I feel blank. I feel saggy. I feel chest tightness because that helps it move from I'm caught in the desire to developing interest in the experience of desire. Remember, I said desire in the very beginning. I said desire is not one thing, right? It's not just I want this. It has this whole complex set of thoughts and feelings connected to it. So there's a there. So great. Thank you for noticing what that was like. And for some people, I know it's a little painful, and it is. Desire can be painful. Just to acknowledge that, and I appreciate what people said. So there's a program that's been around for a long time called Mindfulness-Based Relapse Prevention. And that's a program that works with people with substance addictions, drugs and alcohol primarily. And there's a new one, and unfortunately I can't think of the name right now, but apparently it's having great success. And I forgot to look that one up. But nonetheless, the one that I'm familiar with is mindfulness-based relapse prevention, MBRP. And they introduce a concept that I think is super useful, whether or not you are dealing with addiction. And that is the idea of what's called urge surfing. So, oh, it's also done with cigarettes, for instance. So urge surfing is the idea that our desire comes like a wave. It arises, and then it crests. And after, so it builds, it arises, it builds, it crests. And then from the crest, it falls. So what tends to happen is that when we have a desire, we think it's not going to stop. And the only thing we can do about the desire is fulfill it. But actually, what's happening in our inner experience is the desires arising. We want it, we want it, we want it. Oh, we want it really badly. And then if we stick with it with awareness, it does start to dissipate. It's kind of amazing. I mean, don't believe me, try it yourself and figure this out for you if that's what happens with your desire. That's what my experience is, that if you stay with it, it will have a life of its own. And so the idea in the mindfulness-based relapse prevention is to surf that urge, to go with it, stay with it, and then notice it goes away. And the freedom that is inherent in that, when you start to realize that you're not at the mercy of your desires, you don't have to smoke the cigarette, you don't have to pick up the drink or the drugs, or whatever it is for those of us who are not struggling with addiction. The research on this, and there's a bunch of studies that look at MBRP, this program, is that it can help people respond to cravings and reduce the tendencies for craving to automatically lead to substance use. And so what it does is it trains people to notice the triggers, the cravings, and the urges with awareness, acceptance, and non-judgment, which is what we're practicing here. The goal isn't to get rid of the urge. The goal is to have enough space around the urge that we have a choice, that we can see the urge come and go. And we're going to play with this in a little while. What happens is it moves from being like, I want this, and this thing has a grasp of me, to a bit more of a decentered place. Like, I'm having the experience of wanting this. Wanting is arising within me. I can stay present through the wanting. I notice the thought that I need this. So we're not, again, at the mercy of the thought or the desire or that whole constellation of things. We're noticing it, and that allows that urge surfing process to happen. And so when there's been like a bunch of look at Anyway, the strategy of what's called decentering, and this is moving from my desire to a desire is rising within me. There's a recent research paper, meta-analysis, and I think you know meta-analysis is when they look at all the research that's been done, pick the best ones, and tell you what the results of those are, kind of aggregated. And they looked at 24 different trials and found that a small but significant reduction in food craving intensity from the mindfulness-based interventions. And one of the biggest, it appears that this idea of moving into this decentering, not mine, but the, is a part of the promising strategies, but there's still a lot more research to do. So in other words, there's a difference between I want chocolate and I am noticing wanting chocolate, right? And you know this from our mindfulness practice. Now, some desires are so a couple of things to know about desire and to think about it. Like some desires are it, well, not all desires problematic, let's say it this way. Many desires that we have are beautiful and important. We have desire for connection, for love, for meaningful work, for a healthy planet, for well-being, for there's hundreds of things that we can have a desire for. So I don't want you to think like, oh, this means that that if I practice mindfulness, I should shut down my desires. That is not the case at all. One of my teachers used to make the distinction between what he called wise wants and foolish needs. So wise wants are all the things I mentioned. I want connection. I want good friends. I want to have a life where I'm doing purposeful work. I want, right? That's all I want. And then foolish needs are, above and beyond these things where we tend to get caught, where it tends to be something that maybe we don't really need or that we think our happiness depends upon it. So the main thing though with having healthy wants is that I want this. We can hold it lightly. We can want something, we can work toward it, we can care deeply about it. But we don't make our well-being dependent upon it. So I want something and I may not get it and I can still be okay. And this is really significant. So mindfulness isn't about becoming like a zombie or desireless, but it's about moving from, you might think of it as moving from compulsion to choice. One of the things that people often ask is what happens when I have a desire and it's meaningful and important to me and it can't be fulfilled. So let's say a desire depends on another person or it depends on circumstances that are outside our control. We want a relationship. We want, someone to connect with. We want the world to be different and we're struggling with something in the political arena, we want it. And when that happens, it may come with a lot of grief because we're not getting that desire fulfilled. And there may not be or at least at that moment, there's not chance of it being fulfilled. So we may have sadness, disappointment, loneliness, all sorts of things come up. So the important thing here is to when it's a desire that we just are not certain if it's going to be fulfilled, is not to deny the longing or shut it down, but to let yourself have it, feel it, and be with the space of longing and knowing that you can tolerate the longing. So it's not about suppressing the craving. It's about changing the relationship so that we have more freedom. Like we can continue to have our wonderful goals in life. And at the same time, as I said earlier, holding it lightly. So that's the main thing that I want to do right at this moment. And then we'll get back to it towards the end. But what I'd like to do is a little practice with you. Okay. So, would you be willing? I think most of you are home, I'm hoping, to get something to eat that you like. So, something that might be yummy. That could be if you have chocolate and you like chocolate, that's a great thing. If you don't like chocolate, don't do chocolate. Maybe there's pretzels or potato chips or popcorn I don't know, what do you like? You can decide. But we're going to take like a 3-minute break for those of you who to do that. And if you don't have it, I'm sorry. I should have warned you in advance. I forgot that I was going to do this exercise. But come back in three. It's 5:06. So come back at 5:10 in 4 minutes with something to eat that you can eat for this exercise. I'll see you in a minute. Their food. Don't eat it yet, though. If you're starting to eat it, don't do it. I know you want to because you like this particular thing very much. I was going to get popcorn, which is all I have right now, but the sound of it would have been really annoying to you all, so I'm going to not do that. But I think when I say five, well, I'm giving you another minute. Is everybody back? We're good. I think we're back. All right, we're going to start the meditation. So we're going to do a meditation looking with an explore at an exploration of the way desire works in our body and mind, and seeing for yourself what's happening with this urge surfing quality, or just how desire works. So it's an eating meditation, obviously, and I just invite you to put the food down in front of you and close your eyes for a moment. Take a few breaths, getting centered. And as you contemplate that you're going to eat a bite of something or piece of something, notice how you're feeling. Like, what happens? Is there some salivating? Is there excitement? Is there, well, I'm not that hungry? Like, just to notice what's happening inside you as you contemplate the about to eat moment. Now, pick up, you can open your eyes, pick up your object, your food, and take a look at it and really like look at this thing that is so delightful to you. Notice the shape, the color, notice if it has a smell. Really take a good sniff. Notice what happens inside when you smell it, when you look at it, what happens. Maybe there's some anticipatory feeling, like anticipation. So bring it close to your mouth and then notice what happens. You can close your eyes at this point. Notice what happens. And now bring it down. Put it back down on the table. Oh, disappointment. What happened? Diana, come on. Okay, bring it back up to your mouth. Again, putting it near your mouth, smelling it. This could be a potato chip. It could be a chocolate. I don't know, whatever you found, cookie. All right, so I won't do it again, but open your mouth and put it in and begin to chew. And chew with curiosity and awareness. And you might want to just let it sit in your mouth for a moment and just notice the flavor, notice the pleasure. Is the pleasure moving through your body? Do you want to just gobble it down? See if you can slow it down and just take some, chew it slowly, noticing pleasant experience and perhaps desiring, wanting. Does the desire for another one immediately come up? And when you swallow it, what happens? Is it sad? Is it just you're ready for the next one? So if you have more than one thing, you can eat the second one, but do it really slowly with awareness. noticing all the mechanisms that are happening inside your body and mind. And just do this for fun, like really be playful with it. You don't have, this is not a serious exercise, this is for fun. How is desire, wanting, craving operating? Are we already thinking about the other and more of the same thing before we've even finished? Is there tension? Is it relaxing? What's happening in the rest of your body? There's so much to notice and get curious about. Okay, so let's finish this up and then go back into stillness. You may want more, but you can't have it at least for the next few seconds. Okay, and when you're ready, you can open your eyes. All right. So if you want to keep eating, I'm fine with that. I don't care. But I do want to know what happened. What did you experience? What happened with the desire? Did the desire arise? Did it, if you did, as you ate it, did it get stronger? Did it, if you as you paused, what happened? So I'd love to hear it using the chat, or if anyone wants to come on camera, that's fine too. It was more satisfying, and I could tell exactly where I tasted it on my tongue. That's interesting. So one of the things with the science of the research around mindful eating, which is there are programs about it, is people report that food tastes better because they're actually paying more attention to it. So that's one thing to do when we're having craving desires, to like slow down and really savor it rather than rushing through it and on to the next one. So that was one person experienced. It's, it was kind of complex, so you need a little time to write. Bite-sized dark chocolate, enjoyed much longer because I took my time and the taste lingered. So similar to what Daniel was experiencing. Yeah. So mindful eating. I don't know if people do mindful eating at home, but that's a way of really savoring our food. I'm curious if people experienced the feeling of desire and what happened. I chose chips that were more enjoyable after considering the aroma of the yummy jalapeno flavor. Nice. So what I think we're all so far, the people who have shared have are experiencing more like the pleasure of the savor, which is a great thing. Maybe I should have made you hold this yummy, delicious food and not eat it. Just notice the desire coming and see what happened. I realized that might be more in keeping with what I was trying to teach. I really wanted another bite after the first one. So it's great noticing. She noticed that take a bite, and then the next thing you know, desire keeps going, right? It kind of feeds itself. It would have been hard not to eat it. Yeah, for sure. Before eating it, I enjoyed the smell, which I hadn't really noticed before. Yeah, these are all the mindful eating experience. I experienced new flavors that I hadn't noticed before. The desire for more rose quickly, and then the desire was gone. So I think you, Mike, had an experience of that urge surfing, like it arose and then it disappeared, right? So this is kind of speaking to the point I said earlier about we can notice the desire coming and going rather than feeling like I have to fulfill it to make it myself happy. So thank you for those of you who are willing to share. I'll just say a few more things about how this is relevant in our daily life, because it is. And We are at the mercy of this, of wanting and longing all the time, right? And food is a great example. You walk into a kitchen, you see some food, and you just grab it, it's in your mouth, and it's gone. And you didn't even really notice that you did it. So, of course, this is not necessarily a problem, but it could be a problem. So, it's more like, where do you want to bring your mindfulness to notice how this obstacle desire works? Because when you notice the arising, the wanting, you can pause, you can breathe, you can notice it coming, and you can also then choose. So you can either choose, like, am I actually hungry? Do I really want this? Am I eating out of boredom? Is this simply a habit? And sometimes the answer is yes, I want this, right? This is not about denying yourself pleasurable things at all. The point isn't about not eating it. The point is to choose consciously, to notice the nature of desire and how we fixate on it and how it becomes the most important thing and how we can learn to hold these things li lightly and that we have more choice, more space. So, desire is not something we're trying to eradicate. It's something to know, to understand, to see it when it emerges in our meditation, to see it when it emerges in life, to not be controlled by it, to be the one who has agency so we can surf our desire rather than be at the mercy of it. And then we can hold our wholesome desires lightly, but not be also at the mercy of that. So I think maybe that's the main thing about working with this obstacle of desire. And I'm going to pause now and see if there are any comments. I already see one which said, I can do this with food, but not with major desires, like no longer being healthy enough to do favorite things. Yeah. So this goes into that category I talked about earlier, which is like, we have these desires and they're really important desires. And so, if we're dealing with health issues, and I really wish I could go hiking and we can't anymore. I'm just making this up, Mary, and I don't know what your situation is, but it doesn't. So that's where I said that there's a process that needs to happen around some grieving and disappointment and letting go and being with yourself, doing the work of being mindful of your emotions with difficult situations. Being mindful of, like, and when we're struggling, we know how to bring mindfulness and compassion to that place. So we don't judge ourselves for having the desire. That's a really wholesome desire to have a healthy body that can do all sorts of things. But we also can hold this desire, try to hold this desire a little bit more lightly so we suffer less. Hold on, the dog is trying to get in. 1 second. I just want to see if there are any further questions or comments about working with this particular obstacle. And I really want to emphasize what I said earlier. This is not like turning you into a passionless zombie that does not have desire. That our being a human who wants things is wonderful. Like we have so much beauty in the world and things to desire when they're like healthy desires. And some people shut their desires down. Some people were trained that it's not okay to have desire. And I want to be really clear that I'm not in any way saying that. Like sometimes it's really, for some of us, it's really important to get in touch with our desires. I don't know what I want. So what, how can I get clear? But then again, it's how we hold them. Do we hold it clutching and causing more challenges, or do we hold it with a little bit more freedom? All right. Well, if there are no more thoughts, questions, comments, I'm going to close our group, and I'll be here next week, and I'll do the opposite of desire, which is aversion, which is kind of connected to pain. I might do doubt too, and then we'll go through all of the different particular hindrances or obstacles. So let's just take a moment to breathe together and offer some kindness out, especially to the people who are struggling with in ways that they have important desires, and maybe those desires are not easily fulfilled these days or in this moment. And just offering some compassion and care to the members of our community who are struggling in this way. And get some kindness and compassion towards ourselves for the ways that we desire that where we get caught. It's not about having to not having desire. It's about where we get caught and where it leads to suffering. And so just offering ourselves some care. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes and we'll end our meditation. Somebody asked a question, should we bring something we have aversion to? That's a good idea. I don't know. I don't want you to bring like stinky cheese or whatever. I don't know, something like that. But I'm not sure what exercise we'll do connected to aversion, but it's a good question. Someone said, I'll use this when I prepare for a colonoscopy. Oh yeah, that's the aversion one. Oh, it's the worst. I don't understand, right? Like all the incredible advances of science that they have, and they haven't figured out how to make a colonoscopy prep even slightly palatable. It's ridiculous, right? Anyway, we'll end on that note. All right, my friends. Thanks so much for your kind attention, and I'll see you next week. Have a great week. And pay attention to how desire operates in the midst of your day. Am I caught? Am I holding it loosely? Am I surfing it? See what happens, all right? Sending my love. I'll see you.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.